I recently had the pleasure of partaking in one of life's great joys. I got new brakes on my car. We have an 8-week-old, so you guys thought I was going to say something about that, didn't you? This is one of those totally necessary yet highly annoying expenses, isn't it? I actually didn't think I needed new brakes, but that's that sort of still small squeak that just persists and persists and persists pestered me into calling the auto repair place, who evidently says that that particular type of squeak is typical for needing new brakes. So far as it seems, they were right, but there is now another one that is driving me crazy, so I'm sure I'll be back. It seems like whenever you go into that auto repair place, unless you're a mechanic or a well-trained car repair person, you always sound like you're trying to describe the impossible, doesn't it? Like, it's squeaking, but that kind of squeak where it's like metal rattling, and sometimes when I go over a bump, it's sometimes when I put the brakes on, it sometimes doesn't really happen that consistently. I don't know. It's like the squeak that a rocking chair makes, not like the one that a mouse makes. And then based on that, they're supposed to guess what you're talking about and get it right the first time, right? I sort of felt myself feeling like a crazy person when I was in there trying to say all these different things. And, you know, to his credit, he was right. So, but it did get me thinking about the ways that we sort of make our points to one another, right? We use our hands. We use our faces. We use our tones of voice. We use our body language. It is no wonder that texts and emails get miscommunicated almost more than they are properly communicated. It's hard to communicate sarcasm over a text message. Have you ever tried to communicate with somebody who doesn't speak the same language as you? I'm sure you have, especially in an important situation. I remember traveling to the Holy Land several years ago. We landed in Tel Aviv. We made our way with a bunch of us through passport control, which, if you've ever done, is a sort of a monumental feat in that particular place. We were still about an hour away from Jerusalem by bus, and we had to get to our bus. But a couple of our classmates were detained by the authorities. So I just went and looked for the driver, which I sort of assumed would work out okay. I'm not really sure why I assumed that, but I did. And I didn't speak the language he was speaking. He didn't speak the language that I was speaking. And so we tried to figure out what we were going to do about that, about getting our group back to being whole and then getting in the middle of the night across Israel. I'm not really sure how we did it, but we did it. And I remember just feeling so frustrated that we couldn't get our points across to one another. I'm sure he was too. It strikes me that the way that we live our lives, the actions that we take, the words that we speak, the way that we carry ourselves, not only communicates something, but it witnesses, it proclaims, it preaches, it teaches, it communicates our values too. It communicates our beliefs. How we live and move and have our being in the world tells those with whom we interact just what we hold to be our guiding call. When we live as faithful people in our world today, I think we can start to feel like we're describing that faint noise that a car makes, or we're speaking a foreign language. To be people that do not respond with anger, even when it might seem merited, to be people who honor the commitments we have made, who desire justice so much so that we are willing to suffer more wrong than impose it, who both love and pray for our enemies, is to live in such a way that follows that gospel reading that we just heard. But it is also to live in such a way that this world cannot hear many times. So our call then becomes one about changing that fact. If this way of life that seeks to love and serve as God calls us to is not able to be received or heard now, that means that our lives and all that we do and all that we say, they can change that, right? If we persist, all of our work and our service in the world can begin to change that reality. I sort of was laughing to myself that our readings that from 1 Corinthians and the gospel today got paired with one another. It's not in our control, as you probably know. It just comes up that Paul tells the Corinthians that they're not ready for solid food, so he only gives them milk, and yet then we get that passage from the Gospel of Matthew that is so hard to hear. I feel like that's pretty solid food that we're being fed today. In a way, I think that Jesus is calling us to realize, to remember how deeply that our lives and our words and our actions communicate our beliefs, how we walk the walk, if you will. The text places us within the Sermon on the Mount still, that long passage of teaching in the Gospel of Matthew, his first major teaching in the Gospel. And last week you heard, if you were here, if you were in church, you heard the reading about being salt and light, our call to be salt and light. This is a reflection on ourselves, right? How we are as people in the world. Today, Jesus sort of shifts us to be thinking about how we are in relationship with one another. How do we share our lives together with the people that are around us? I think some of these words can be hard for us to hear, too. Not only Jesus says, are we to not murder, which I think is the easiest of the commandments that we heard today, I hope. But we are to seek to not even be angry. To not even be angry? That makes me mad. How are we supposed to do that? And then we hear prohibitions and teachings about our relationships with our partners or spouses or dating relationships, about adultery and divorce. And they can land quite heavily on our hearing today as people living in 2017. Divorce is more and more common in our world, for example, and many times for healthy and good reasons. And then we hear a teaching about swearing oaths, to not swear at all. I'm not sure that we swear oaths quite in the same way that they would have, that we're talking about here, but we sort of get that not only, you know, you've heard it said one thing, but I'm telling you even more so. It starts to feel like a lot. We have to do all of that? How, I mean, and then we're supposed to take that and apply it to our lives in 2017 in Overland Park, Kansas, and figure out what that means. I think the answer to those questions lies in my example that I used earlier about the car getting fixed or the foreign language. In our ability, in our willingness, in our seeking to live as people who relentlessly pursue justice and mercy and not anger, who care for and pray for our enemies, who honor and keep our commitments to see the image of God in all people, to live this way tells the world that something that it needs to hear. We tell the world what it is to be a follower of a loving and merciful and hopeful God who is light in darkness, and how our lives have been changed because of it. If we're to live this way, though, and I believe we're called to, we also must remain aware of the fact that the world is not prepared to hear or to see that example, I think. If I walked up to you right now and told you about that noise my car was making, unless you were trained to know about it, you could probably take a guess. And you might be wrong. You probably are going to be the chances are just as good that you'd be right as you would be wrong, right? If we live as people who seek justice and not anger, who honor those we love, who care for those who wrong us, many in this world will be confused by that way of life. That doesn't match up with what every other message that we hear says. They'll say that we should be standing up for ourselves. We should get mad. We should seek whatever brings us temporal happiness. That getting even is the right way to live, not seeking justice and wholeness. And we don't lose hope even in the face of that, even when we might want to. We don't simply stop acting or stop loving or stop being signs of God's light and love in the world. In fact, actually, it means just the opposite. If we, by our lives and words and example, could teach the world more about what is now, what seems like a foreign language of God's love and hope and mercy, then that language no longer is foreign. That language becomes what is spoken every day. That becomes what we see and feel every day. That language becomes what changes our world. The way of living that seeks personal gain over community, that seeks immediate happiness over God's joy, that proclaims the haves over the have-nots, that leaves out those who are different. That way of being no longer becomes as prevalent as it is now. That way of being, that language, becomes the foreign language, if you will. And even more than that, when the world can begin to see the hope and life and love of God in the way that you and I live our lives every day, the world can be changed. Each person will know that even when all seems lost, they are found. Even when all seems dark, there is light. Even when all seems impossible, there is hope. Even when they don't feel it, they are loved. My prayer for you is that you know this about yourself more deeply, so deeply that you can't help but show it as you go about your life every day, that all of us would. And then the challenge and the call becomes for us to actually live that out, to live as if we have been loved in such a way that has changed our lives. Because if we can live that way, we can tell the world that things don't have to be like this, that God loves the world, that God will change the world, and that God will redeem the world.